Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. A Swiss Cheese Heart by me, Ruth Ayers. On a whim, Andy and I hosted our first exchange student. It was before we were 30, before we were parents, and when donuts for dinner were acceptable. Taya was from Finland, and we didn't know that we would become a family. We just thought we'd have fun. We traveled New York City, Tennessee, Michigan, St. Louis, LA, San Diego, Mexico. We were constantly on the move. Except when we were lingering at the dinner table and playing cards or watching movies or competing in a who could hold a headstand the longest contest. Always Andy. Although we had completely different worldviews, we decided we liked being together. It was never a formal declaration, but somewhere between ice cream runs and goodnight hugs, we decided the differences mattered a whole lot less the more you cared about someone. When Taya left, we were stunned by the holes ripped in our hearts. They nearly paralyzed us, and I wondered if we would ever host again. It's not fun to have a piece of your heart walking around the other side of the globe. After a year with Taya, we learned a family is more than bloodlines. We moved on to adopt 4 kids and host 3 more exchange students since Taya returned to Finland. I have a heart that resembles Swiss cheese, and somehow it remains full. When we decided kindness and caring matter more than differences, we can have full hearts. In a magical way, we can give away pieces of our hearts, and they will remain full when we decide to show love to those who have different beliefs from our own. This week, we tackle the question, are your conferences uplifting? It is so important that kids have more energy for the work they're doing after they meet with us than before. The resources this week in the Big Fresh are fabulous. In the Free for All section, you find 2 articles, one from Dana Murphy, where she helps you think through the process of collecting notes, and considering and watching the way that kids are responding to you. It's a great article that you won't want to miss, especially if you've never found the perfect form. The other article we share in the Free for All section is an article that I wrote about conferring forms that can be shared. In some classrooms, there are a ton of adults working with students, and a conferring form that stays with the student and allows you to see the kinds of conversations they've had, as well as pinpoint some specific goals for each child, can be a game changer in creating conferences that lift the energy level of kids. You'll want to check out this article because I share 3 different forms that you can click on, print, and put to use in your classroom. Our members' content is some of the best around. This week, Matt Renwick shares about how sincerity and positivity always give students more confidence in themselves as writers. I love Tammy Mulligan's new article. It is encouraging students to support their peers as writers by being a roving student conferrer. What Tammy is doing is she's putting students in the role of the teacher and allowing them to confer during work time. Included in this article is a form that Tammy uses with her students and guides you through having students take on the role of a teacher. It helps them have pride in the skills they have. I share a new video where I caution us not to let our pet peeves get in the way of working with student writers. I know for me, this is something I've had to really work on because my pet peeves can often lead to nitpicking, and nitpicking rarely is uplifting. Melanie Meehan shares a conferring card that she uses in writing conferences where it's a record of strengths and possibilities for the student. You'll want to check out that encore video. And finally, in a deep dive course that is free for our members, Christy Rush Levine takes you into her middle school classroom and really breaks down the strategies and techniques she uses with students to deepen their reflection and understanding of books while conferring. There are so many printables, useful tools. It is just chocked full, as well as great content around the topic of conferring with readers. I hope you'll take some time to check out these resources. I am ecstatic about the content in our Leaders Lounge this week. There is a personal essay written by Stella Villalba where she reflects on her journey of learning to confer with students, and she reminds us of the importance of this practice. The title of the article is Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Conferring with Students. In a coaching minute, Inga Omandi encourages instructional coaches to curate a network of others who are doing similar work. This is something that I am passionate about. So often, instructional coaches find themselves alone. Often, coaches live between two worlds. They live between teachers in classrooms and administrators. And it is difficult to live on the fence. And so finding a network of others who are doing similar work is essential. We share a link to Matt Renwick's newsletter, Read by Example, where Matt is encouraging us to teach students where they are at their point of need. Matt is inspired by Dr. Goldie Mohammed in this must-read for all school leaders as we are navigating the lingering effects of the pandemic on learning. Finally, our Literacy Leaders members have access to a deep dive course by Dana Murphy. It's called It's a Cycle, Not a Hamster Wheel, Getting the Most Out of Coaching Cycles. Dana gives you some of the best advice on making coaching cycles work in your neck of the woods. She also is sharing videos. She shares initial meetings between coaches and teachers. She's giving tons of forms to use, important tips for getting organized, and how to take good notes throughout the cycle. Additionally, there are several linked pieces of content from literacy coaches across the country. Those of you who are just getting started with the new school year, wanting to set up your coaching cycles, set up a plan for working with teachers, this course is something that will be a huge asset to your thinking as you're getting started with a new school year. And now it's one of my favorite kinds of episodes where we share the Choice Literacy Book Club discussion. This week, it is led by Tammy Mulligan.
So hi, everyone. We're at Book Club tonight to talk about Ouch Moments by Michael Genhart. And I picked this book because I learned about it on TBR blog from Ashley Craig. And I just thought the way it was written, it would really resonate with first graders and help them to understand what a bias is and what a microaggression is. So I tried it with them and had lots of success, and then wanted to hear other teachers' thoughts about it.
I work with middle school students, and I think that it would come in handy even for teaching middle school students what a microaggression is. I think that the comparison, or kind of like the introduction to microaggressions through the use of physical pain, physical ouches, is really a strong way to get students to understand and acknowledge that words actually do make a difference. And I really loved the way that the microaggressions were in the illustrations. And so you had to read both the images and the text to get the full meaning on each page.
Yeah, I love that too. What I did was I Xeroxed just some of the pages. You know, I give one page to each partnership of kids, and even 6 and 7 year olds looked at these pictures and they knew exactly what the microaggression was and what people were saying and what had happened in it. And I thought, you know, it helped us to just have all kinds of conversations about them.
Tammy, one of the things that I love so much about reading this book is that it gives the students strategies for empowering them for when they're experiencing these microaggressions, in whether it be in their classroom, out at recess, in the home, and it kind of defining them as be calm, be brave, be yourself, be loud, be caring, be kind, tell an adult. All of those, I could really see a classroom teacher noticing and naming when the students are standing up to these microaggressions in the classroom or at recess or music class, and giving the students feedback to help empower them to continue with that.
I agree. I thought the language was just so crystal clear in that way. And what I had children do is we started to, you know, act them out and then act out what we would say to the aggressor and what would we say to the person who is the victim. And I really found that kids needed a lot of, they really understood how to help the person who was hurt. But the person who had committed this and thinking about, you know, sort of talking with them or helping them to understand what they did, that took more work in the classroom. And I felt like that was good work to do as well. And for people to children to understand that, you know, we all have biases and we all do things that are hurtful. And, you know, we need to notice them and fix them, but not also, you know, judge someone so harshly, right? Give everyone another shot.
Tammy, that was one of my favorite parts of the book. I noticed at the end of the story, there's a lot of resources for adults who are working with kids. And one of the things I noticed it mentioned was that, you know, often the person who is like the perpetrator of the microaggression doesn't even know they're doing it. It's just sort of ingrained in how they've been speaking, and they haven't really oftentimes even thought about the impact of the words that they're using. And so I just loved that page on Be Caring, that two-page spread that really invites kids to humanize all of the people involved and not just automatically think if you say something that is offensive, that might be an ouch moment for somebody else, that you're automatically bad, but that it might be that you just don't understand yet, or we could actually question those students to see, like, are you all right? Is that coming from a place of, you know, you have a need, that the bystanders could actually jump in and help both parties. And I really liked that piece because it's so easy to just get this idea like, oh, it's just bully versus victim, bully bad, victim good, when really the truth is, you know, we know all of our kids have goodness in them. And so I loved that the book was empowering to give kids that opportunity to be humanizing.
Christy, I wrote down as I was reading it, the line, when every ouch moment happens, or when ouch moments happen, everyone needs help. And so with what you just shared, it really made me think that everyone can learn from these experiences. And when thinking about those that are saying things, that there's a reason behind it, whether in the text it talks about maybe they're repeating it, something that they've heard and don't know what it means, or they're trying to be funny. So really getting behind it and helping to to really support all that are involved.
I feel like it just takes the power out of it when someone, you know, if you say something that's hurtful to someone and someone asks you, are you okay? Or that doesn't sound like you, It just, yeah, I think I agree with you, the both of you, that it just changes the conversation and humanizes everyone. And that's one part I just loved about the book. But I have to say, kids, there weren't as many ideas from kids about what to say. We reviewed that page a lot about what do you say to the person who used ugly words, as it says.
Yeah, and Tammy, I think your idea to do some role playing based on the scenarios in the book is really wise because it gives kids that opportunity to try that on, because it's not something I think we ask of kids to get involved in supporting everyone in those scenarios.
No, I felt like they really needed the language in their mouths and to practice it when it wasn't in the moment. So I started by having them role play these, you know, scenarios, a couple of them. And then I started to, you know, make some of my own based off of, you know, things that would happen in the classroom, just in general. And then they started to write their own. They'd make like sort of a four, you took a piece of paper and divided it into four, like a four box, like comic. And then, you know, we would try one of those each day and they loved it, but they got a lot better at the language, you know, and then I'd start to hear things like, "Ooh, sorry, that was my bias coming out." You know, I'd hear things like that on the playground and I felt like, okay, then it's sticking. It's changing things.
I really liked hearing, reading about that on the Padlet, Tammy, where you were describing that role playing, and just in the book, just for listeners who are listening into our conversation and they've not seen it, the book is called Ouch Moments, which is what the authors are using to refer to microaggressions. And at the end is the Note to Parents and Caregivers by Dr. Kevin Nadal. And I thought it was really useful information, which we've talked about a little bit. At the very beginning of that, he talks about how people and young people have this capacity for caring, but they need guidance on how to care for one another. And it reminded me of a foster care training that I went through where they talk to us about how kids need to learn to care. And it just really struck me. And so when I was reading this book, I was thinking a lot about that, about how it's intentionally teaching kids how to care for one another. And I was glad I hadn't seen this book before you picked it. And I'm so glad that it's in my hands because I feel like it's a useful tool for helping kids learn to care in a way that takes us out of the moment, like out of a heat of a moment, and just lets us spend some time thinking about it and giving kids a chance to think about it so that they can really learn how to be caring people.
Ruth, I love what you just said. It really, as I was reading it, I was thinking about the home connection and how we can use this book with families as well, because as a mother, I know how important it is to have the language and the vocabulary to talk with my children about what's happening. And when these conversations are happening in the classroom, how can we bridge that to the home as well?
Exactly. And we're not sure how to. And Tammy, when you were talking about that role-playing piece, so when we adopted our daughters, they were 4 and 6, and there were a lot of things that they didn't know about how to get along. And so we kept staging scenarios, and we would take pictures of like, okay, let's take a picture of what it looks like to play this game in a way that is loving and kind. And so we'd all sit around and play it or and pose for a picture. And then we'd do one a picture about, well, what does it look like if we're not being loving and kind? And we take a picture of that and we put them together in a book to help reinforce this idea of how do you care for one another when you're living in community. And I was so surprised how from my experience and the way that I grew up, I
it was a way that we were treated. And I was surprised that our girls had to learn to care. And it mattered. Like, if we would just rush by that, then they still wouldn't know how to interact. It wasn't that they were naughty girls or that they wanted to do the wrong thing. It's just they had never learned how to care for others. And this book, it takes something that's so abstract and it makes it concrete. Like Christy said, beginning with that concrete examples like a bee sting or your fingers caught in a door, and then goes through when we're using ugly words.
Ruth, in what you were just saying about how you helped your girls learn to care reminds me of the language on the Tell an Adult page, because I just love that Tell an Adult page starts with the sentence, kids can really make a difference on their own, and then follows it up with, but sometimes you need to bring adults into the plan. Adults can help show you the way to a solution if you get stuck. And I love that language because it's not about adults swooping in to create the solution. It's still about pathways. And, you know, when Tammy was talking about giving the kids the opportunity to kind of do the comics or storyboards of scenarios, and when you were talking about posing for the pictures with the girls, there's, you know, a way we're so used to in education of just kind of facilitating the learning, giving the kids the opportunity to kind of play those things out. Without having to tell them, this is what it looks like when we're, you know, kind to each other, and this is what it looks like when we're not. You know, kids know, they just have to be guided to pay attention to those things. And that's one of the things, you know, it's very obvious on that one page, but it's one of the things I liked about this book was that the language is throughout empowering to kids.
Yeah, I love that, Christy. I really thought, I didn't think of that line before, but I love how you brought up that line, kids can really make a difference on their own. I think that's really empowering. And also saying that, you know, and you can also tell an adult and they can help too. But I think that's empowering that kids have some agency in this. They're not out there alone. They can do something about it.
In the last lines, you have a choice. What will you do? That to me really brings forth the empowerment in the kids, and that we believe that they can and will make the decisions that that are right.
Heather makes me think about this as a mentor text for writing, like beyond the meaning and the lessons that it teaches about microaggressions, which is all really valuable. It's also valuable as an example in classrooms at a variety of levels as a type of self-help writing, or maybe even it could be how to, you know, if you look at it through that lens, or even I noticed that it acknowledges a counter argument, like acknowledges, hey, maybe you'll try something and it won't work, or maybe you'll speak up and there'll be some backlash, but it kind of gives, you know, why it's worth trying it even though it might not work, or trying it even though people might react negatively at first. And so even argumentative writing could be taught through some of the techniques in the book. I just thought, and that, you know, leaving sort of with this open-ended call to action at the end is another move that a young writer could make in their writing. So I think it's valuable on lots of levels.
I never even saw that before in it, Christy, but I now see it as you're looking at it. And I think you're right, especially that ending. You know, it does give that call to action in such a way that children can notice and emulate in their own writing and make it their own.
I was thinking about that ending too, as a call to action, and that it's a question. I bet when you finish reading this, kids are just, they're answering because they're right there and they have something to say. So I'm glad you were noticing that, Christy.
After this conversation, now I was wondering if you know, I might, obviously I'll read it aloud this year and use it with kids in lots of ways, but I'm also wondering if it's a resource I might want to pass out to families, you know, as situations arise, or just even send it home as kind of a traveling book for families to have as an option for conversations. Because I think there was a lot for families in it as well that all of you pointed out, and that might be helpful.
Tammy, I think that's a great idea. And what a great resource to put in the hands of parents, because it's something that's happening in classrooms. And I thought, like in the author's note where they acknowledged, you know, we don't always know how to have these conversations with kids or with our own kids. And it was useful information, helpful information, just even the acknowledgement or the teaching for adults and caregivers to validate what your child is saying instead of brushing it off. And I admire that idea of sending it home or getting it into the hands of families, because really that's how change is going to happen, is when it's coming, you know, when we're all on the same page and moving together.
One of the most valuable things in that parent and caregiver section to me is the fact that, again, it acknowledges, like, what do you do as an adult when your child is the target, and what do you do when your child is the enactor? And I loved even that language helps grown-up people talk about microaggressions and talk about this kind of language with a variety of age levels.
It's true. I was a little surprised by, I don't know what the right word is, but the microaggressions, the ouch moments that were throughout the book, they're inside the picture. So there's the text, and then within the picture is what the authors would call the ugly words or the mean things that people are saying. And they, it's what you would hear kids saying. Like, I didn't feel like that was sugar-coated or softened. I thought some of the ouch moments or the microaggressions, they were harsh. And did you think that too? Like, am I
felt like they were harsh and exactly what you said. I thought they were harsh too, but they were also honest. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the book helped me to get past the surface with kids and deal with what people actually are sometimes really saying to each other, and bring up issues of gender and size and race, and what it actually looks like when people, you know, are really hard on each other.
Yeah, that's the perfect word. Like, the honesty of it was both hard and refreshing, because this is what kids are facing, and to have it in a book that can allow us to have more conversation is a great resource. I'm glad you chose it.
Yeah, I was just so thankful to the person who blogged about it, Ashley Craig, because I would have missed it. I definitely would have missed it. And so I just thought it was really helpful.
How about we take a minute and just go around and share who you are, where you're from, and if you have any final thoughts about the book.
I am Christy Rush Levine, and I teach sixth grade language arts in a suburb of Chicago. One of the things that is a takeaway for me is I can see so much potential for getting kids to dig deeper and deeper into this text. You know, working with sixth graders, I think that they're going to have some similar insights to first graders, but I think they're also going to be capable of doing some deeper analysis as well. I think even just asking them to compare between the difference between a physical pain and when somebody uses ugly words and the intention behind those. I also think digging into, you know, we talked about how harsh the microaggressions in the illustrations are, and a lot of them are. And then I think there are some other ones that might make people pause, like, what's so bad about that? Like, reading is for nerds, or he throws like a girl. I think those are still more common microaggressions. And so I liked that too, that you kind of have this this sort of balance among them, where some are so obviously hurtful, and others are a little bit more subtle. And I think getting middle school students to dig into that would really be time well spent.
I'm Tammy Mulligan, and this year I'll be teaching grade two. And so for me, I think based on this conversation, I really want to think more about the note in the back to parents and caregivers, and think about a small collection of texts like this one, and that deal with other issues that families are often talking about, and maybe having some sort of traveling book bag that moves from family to family that gives some, you know, ideas and advice and sparks conversations in homes about important ideas.
I'm Heather Fisher. I'm an instructional coach in an elementary school in Massachusetts. And one way that I am planning on using this text is when working with classroom teachers in developing a shared vocabulary in their community building with students with the terms ouch moments and ugly words.
My name is Ruth Ayers, and I'm the editor at Choice Literacy and a director of professional learning for a consortium in Indiana. The thing that I'm thinking about now that I wasn't thinking about before is the amount of energy and the importance that it is for teachers to recognize that kids do have a capacity to learn to care. They have a capacity for caring, and that they need opportunities in order to look at how to care and learn how to do that. So I'm grateful for the conversation. Heather, you have our next book for September. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yes, our September book club pick is So You Want to Be an Owl, Everything There Is to Know About Owls, written by Jane Porter and illustrated by Maddie Frost. As you're reading this text, it's going to be like you're taking a class, learning about owls from an owl. So get ready for an engaging informational text.
Heather, I'm excited about this pick, and you guys are going to want to check out Heather's book talk about it. It'll be posted in the book club course soon, and I think that we'll be really excited to discuss it next month. At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.